Representative from the Church Board. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Please read the announcements in your order of service and be sure to bring it home to read the rest of them. In addition, here are a few others. Since Lifeway's daycare has closed its doors here at our church, it is time to think about renting our church to other groups. Please join us for a brainstorming session after service next Sunday, March 27th. If you are interested in learning more about LCUUC, sign up for the UU orientation session scheduled next Saturday. Yvonne Fort will be at the welcome table after the service if you have questions. Today is the monthly designated collection sponsored by the Social Action Committee, which will be taken along with the regular weekly collection. This month's collection will go to the Bread of Life to support its monthly community meal program for Heartland residents, many of whom are socially isolated. And now we have an announcement from the stewardship.
Good morning. So where's the flame? Who's keeping the flame? There's the flame. I need your help. We all need your help. Send it on its pathway. Send it up to me. Bring the flame. Pass the flame. Send it on its pathway. Get it up here. Come on, get it up here. Somebody needs to bring it up here. Would you hold it for me while I make my announcements? Would you keep the flame? Thank you. Several announcements. The tiles will be available again today for those of you who have not had an opportunity to make them. And I just want to thank everybody because the tiles that we're producing are just beautiful. So if you haven't had an opportunity to see some of them, please take a look at them. There's going to be a sign-up sheet for help with the dance on April 9th. It'll be by the coffee in the meeting room. The dance, again, is April 9th. And the week of March 27th, you're going to be contacted by the canvassers who will give you more information about the campaign and allow you to express your views about what we need in terms of the ministry in this church. And the first canvassing training is today after service. So thank you. Good job.
I invite you to greet those sitting around you. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There is a variety of information available on the table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to any that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church. Or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk to you about that as well. If you are visiting with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. Our nursery is just outside the door to my right. If you would like to go along and observe your child's class, please do. The nursery is just outside the door to my right and across the entryway if there is a need for child care during the service. Classes will end at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we'd be pleased if you would introduce them. And if any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so.
Kelly and Miles, and we brought Miles' big sister, Nicolette.
Welcome. welcome.
Penny, I was so excited about the flame that I forgot that we have a testimonial also for stewardship.
Oh, okay, we can do that now. This would be a good time.
Hi, my name is Julie Heisler. I was asked by the stewardship committee to tell you why my daughter Emily and I have joined this church. Well, to make a long story short, I'm a recovering Catholic. Kind of by accident, I found the UU Church in Maguanago about 15 years ago, and Emily and I were members there for a number of years. We stopped attending in Maguanago shortly before they sold their building, and so for a while, we were without a church to call home. I started looking for a new spiritual home about 18 months ago and attended a few of the services here. I really liked what I saw and heard, and so I brought Emily to check it out. You see, I was forced to attend church 6 days a week for 8 years of grade school, followed by 4 years at a Catholic high school and 5 years at a Jesuit university. Now that Emily is a young adult, it is really important to me that she feels like she is an equal participant in making decisions about her church involvement. And after just one service, and it happened to be the service during which the seniors talked about their mentoring year, she was ready to join. In addition, Emily has decided on her own to be rededicated here at this church because she feels so strongly about the mission and the values that you represent. So I'd just like to say thanks for welcoming us into your church family and for giving us a new church to call home.
Invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. I hope you find this morning's service inspiring. Our speaker today is our own Jane Esmondson.
Our opening words are from the disciple Mark. If someone would scatter seeds on the ground and would sleep and rise night and day, the seed would sprout and grow. The earth reproduces itself, first the blade, then the ear, then the full corn of the ear. When the grain is ripe, the harvest has come.
I invite you all now to join in the sung chalice lighting, and the tune to the hymn, if you aren't aware of it, is in your hymnal. It's number 372, and this is a tradition of this congregation. Children or whoever else would like to come up for the story for all ages.
Well, we'll see if this works.
Oh, there we go.
Talking to the adults today about are about changes that happen in life. And sometimes when there are changes, it's exciting and it's fun and you look forward to it. And sometimes when there are changes, it's really, really stressful and kind of scary, and people feel upset or they feel angry or mad or don't know quite what to do. And so this is a story I'm going to read to you about the unexpected and how you can react to the unexpected with a lot of like concern and fear. Or you can respond to the unexpected with like, I wonder what this is going to be about. This is the story of Chicken Little. You know this story? Oh. One day, Chicken Little was walking in the woods when kerplunk, an acorn fell on her head. Oh my goodness, said Chicken Little, the sky is falling, I must go and tell the king. On her way to the king's palace, Chicken Little met Henny Penny. And Henny Penny said that she was going into the woods to hunt for worms. Oh, don't go there, said Chicken Little. I was there and the sky fell on my head. Come with me to tell the king. So Henny Penny got very concerned too, and she joined Chicken Little, and off they scurried along and along and along into the woods. Soon they met Cocky Locky, who said, I'm going into the woods to hunt for some seeds. Oh, don't go there, said Henny Penny and Chicken Little. The sky fell on my head, and I got so scared. We're going to go and tell the king. Oh, my God, the sky is falling. So Cocky Locky joined Henny Penny, and he was very, very concerned as well. And they scurried along and scurried along as fast as they could. And soon they met Turkey Lurkey, who was planning to go into the woods to look for berries. Oh, no, don't go there, said Cocky Locky. The sky is falling. We're going to go and tell the king. You have to go with us. Well, Turkey Lurkey had no idea what this was all about, but he decided, well, it must be true. Something is going on. So he joined Cocky Locky and Henny Penny and Chicken Little, and they went along as fast as they could. Then who should appear on the path but sly old Foxy Woxy? Where are you going, my fine feathered friend? Asked Foxy Woxy, and he spoke in a polite manner so as not to frighten them. The sky is falling, cried Chicken Little. We must tell the king. Oh, I know a shortcut to the palace, said Foxy Woxy sweetly. Come and follow me. But wicked Foxy Woxy did not lead the others to the palace. He led them right up to the entrance of his fox lair. And once they were inside, Foxy Woxy was planning to gobble them up. Just as Chicken Little and the others were about to go into the fox's hole, they heard a strange sound and they stopped and listened. It was the king's hunting dogs growling and howling. Oh! Oxy Woxy ran across the meadows and through the forest with the hounds close behind. And he ran until he was far, far, far away and he was never heard from again. After that day, Chicken Little always carried an umbrella with her when she walked in the woods. The umbrella was a present to her from the king. Because if Kerplunk, an acorn, or something else unexpected happened to fall on Chicken Little's head or fall into her path, she didn't mind a bit. As a matter of fact, she did say, that is the story for the day about how to deal with the unexpected in life.
Thank you. Please join now in singing the first hymn of the morning, which is 298, and it is in your green songbook, and it's called Wake Now My Senses. And we are going to be singing verses 1, 2, and 5, and you are invited to stand and sing if you are interested in doing that. Service for an offertory, and I would like to read these words by Arthur Foote. Freely have we received of gifts that minister to our needs of body and spirit. Gladly we bring to our church and its wide concerns a portion of this bounty.
Thank you.
This is the sacred time in our service when we share our deepest concerns and our greatest joys with each other and our spiritual community. If you have a joy or concern that you'd like to share, please raise your hand. An usher will bring you the microphone. Tell us your first name and then briefly your joy or concern. And I'll light a candle in honor of your joy or concern, just to hold, be symbolic, to hold that in our thoughts and our prayers for you. As our custom, I'll light our first memorial candle in dedication to the people of Japan. May they find hope and peace and healing in rebuilding their lives and rebuilding their country.
I just want to say that the other microphone's battery is dead, so we just have one this morning, so be patient.
So, this is Kathy. I'd like to light a candle of gratitude for the organizers of the retreat yesterday, which was a wonderful retreat capped off by a supermoon rising in the east around the bonfire. And I have a slight inkling of all the work that went into the retreat, but I'm sure it's just a slight inkling, and it's very appreciated. Thank you.
Hi, this is Mark. I'd like to light a candle of sorrow. As many of you know, this past week I lost my mother, but also a candle of joy that I was able to go right before my last trip to Australia in early March to celebrate her 86th birthday with her, and she died quickly with very little pain and lived a full life till 86 years old. So.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'd like to light a candle of concern for the people of Libya.
Hi, I'm Terry, and I'd like to light a candle of joy for my husband, Tony, and I, who are celebrating our 13th anniversary tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Patty. Laura, would you please light a candle in memory of my husband, Mike, who died 2 years ago today?
Hello. This one works. Well, I'd like to light a candle in concern for what's happening in our country right now. And I know a number of people in this church have been working to put their hands and hearts into doing what they can, and I hope that it will all come out someday to the good.
I'm Joanna, a candle of concern for my family as we struggle to make good decisions
for a very ill brother.
My name's Lynn, a candle of concern for what's going on in Libya as well, and hopefully not many more lives will be lost.
I'm Jane, and I would like to have a candle lit for both joy and sorrow at the same time, so just one candle will do. I wasn't at the retreat yesterday because my children, whom I haven't seen, two of them I haven't seen for about 3 years, unexpectedly came to Madison, but I put them to work packing because as you know, I'm going to be leaving here because I got married to a wonderful Swedish man. I'm going to be moving to Sweden. But the unexpected thing that happened, which is a joy to me, but it's also a great sorrow, is that I got my permission to live in Sweden much earlier than I had thought. And I also have been offered an opportunity to apply for a job at the end of April, which is working in an orphanage for refugee children. And so on April 19th, I will be flying to Sweden and staying there. So in a month, I will be gone. But Mats will be here from the April 5th until the 19th, and so you'll be able to meet him and to celebrate, and so we'll have time to say goodbye to each other. Thank you.
And I'll light our last candle for the joys and concerns that we keep hidden in our hearts.
I would like to invite you all now to a moment of silent meditation, prayer, and reflection. And I will read these words by Judith Meyer. Anne Sexton wrote, "Look to your heart that flutters in and out like a moth. God is not indifferent to your need. You have 1,000 prayers, but God has one. Dear God, we give thanks for those moments when we can feel that we live in a world that is not indifferent to our need. We all have so many needs, 1,000 prayers, 1,000 needs, that really only need one answer. And that is, let the world not be indifferent. And may we live and be with each other in the way that shows this truth, whatever the day brings, that neither are we indifferent to each other." Please join now in singing the centering hymn, Spirit of Life, which is 123 in your hymnal. Begin by reading words by a theologian whose name is Paul Tillich. The name of this infinite and inexhaustible depth and ground of all being is God. That depth is what the word God means. And if that word has not much meaning for you, translate it and speak of the depth of your life, of the source of your being, of your ultimate concern, of what you take seriously without any reservation. Perhaps in order to do so, you must forget everything traditional that you have learned about God, perhaps even the word itself. When I came upon Paul Tillich while I was studying at seminary, I was intrigued and relieved. I was studying at a UCC seminary, United Church of Christ, which is the liberal side of Congregationalism. One of my professors there once said to me, "You know, Janie, what UCC really stands for? Unitarians Considering Christ." Well, although I wasn't considering Christ, since I am not a Christian, I was interested in who Jesus was. And although I was also not considering God, since I'm a non-theist, I was interested in how the concept might be understood. So when I came upon Paul Tillich and his various wonderful writings, I was really intrigued, because although Tillich was a Christian, he was also a humanist, meaning that his belief in the Christ opened up for him the best ways to consider what it meant to be human. And one of those concepts was talking about God and posing God as nothing other than that which is the ground of being, that which is of the utmost importance to us, that which is our ultimate focus, our inner stance, our very soul and reason for our existence. Tillich understood that God, for him, was the end-all and the be-all, and he also believed that this was true for everyone, even if one didn't use the word God. I had heard this type of argument before, that God exists even if I didn't believe in God, and who could dispute that possibility? Or the reverse of it, that God doesn't exist even if I believe in God. I find those discussions to be round robins, where there are only stances taken, polar opposite viewpoints expressed, but nothing concrete to show for it at the end. And now here, with Paul Tillich's expression of God as the ground of being, that which is of ultimate concern to us, that which we have faith in, that which guides us and determines our actions, supports our internal belief system, and leads us in the attempt to lead a meaningful and relevant life. That concept of God I could accept and use. So much so that when I have spoken to you these past 2 years from this pulpit as a non-theistic humanist, and yet have used the word God at times, I have done so not to pander to those of you who want the word heard in the sermon, nor did I use the word to agitate those of you who don't want the word used in the sermon, as though I'm challenging you to consider something differently. No, I used the word because it fit the message, it supported my premise. It was both an illustration and the ground of my being when I was speaking. And I speak to you this morning on what is actually going to be the last full sermon that I present here to you. And I've been brought once again to reflect upon the beauty of Unitarian Universalism, its strength of character because of its necessary central theme, which is to ask questions rather than to provide answers. Its willingness and actual push to consider other ways of believing because its expansion as a religion over time has necessitated that it become more than it once was, and that is to say that it is no longer a Christian religion. But in saying that, it does not mean that the works of Jesus, his teachings, and his sacrifice to the greater good is missing here. For indeed it is not. Jesus' radical challenge to the Jewish faith, his seeking to rid it of its current focus on how things are done, the oil, the incense, the rituals, the shoulds and the shouldn'ts, rather than on focusing what God wanted his people to do, which was to act justly, to have mercy, and to love God as one loves oneself. These are the same challenges Unitarian Universalism requires of itself, and of all of us who profess to be Unitarian Universalists. It is just as easy for us to get caught up in how things are done, how things have always been done, how things should be done, and to forget that the true message of this faith, its true central theme, is in the seeking of truth and justice, and to act with equity and compassion in human relations. Our principles and purposes do not ask us to do particular things in a particular way, but to be particular people who behave in a particular way. The central core of this religion is not about authority out there, but about the independent authority that every congregation holds within itself, the authority that only resides here and nowhere else. Our way of governance as Unitarian Universalists, which is how we run our ship with governance, is called congregational polity, which means that it is the congregations of each single UU church, fellowship, or society which decides for itself how it is to be run, how to make its decisions, and even if it wants to be a lay-led congregation or a congregation with a minister or some combination of the two. The decision-making is here, it's in this room, right now, with all of you. It is only the congregation which decides who a minister will be. And indeed, that person that you choose can be anybody, even a person among you, right now, sitting next to you. You could choose that person. It is a person whom you value, respect, look to, and trust. It need not be a person specifically trained in ministry, nor need it be a person who holds a particular theological bent that meshes with yours. The person that you choose to be your minister must be a person who holds your vision of yourselves aloft, who takes the best and the brightest bits of who you are and who you aspire to be, and helps to bring that light out into the world. Between 1971 and 1993, David Pohl was the Ministerial Transitions Director and the Director of Ministry at the UUA in Boston. And during that time, he wrote a piece he called The 10 C's of Ministry. While I was in seminary, I had pasted those 10 C's of Ministry on my office wall. And just the other day, I found it creased and folded in the papers I was sorting through recently as I prepared for my journey Swedenward. And I wanted to share it with you because I think it will give you a good grounding upon which to stand as you embark upon this new journey for a search for your future called minister. And so these are his words. Having served as a student minister for 4 years, a full-time parish minister for 17 years, and ministerial transitions director for the Association of the Unitarian Universalism in Boston from 1971 until 1985, I find that my thoughts on our ministry are in substance with those of the American Unitarian Universalist Association years ago. And if I were serving on a ministerial search committee or were a member of a congregation about to seek a new minister, I thought, what expectations would I bring to that search? What qualities would I like to see in our next minister? And what priorities would I assign them? There are at least 10 specific qualities that would have priority for me, he writes. And it so happens with my fondness for alliteration that all of these qualities begin with the letter C. Alliteration, like illustration, can be a helpful teaching and preaching device, and so I use it here without apology, but with the admission that it took a little straining to come up with the words to maintain the alliterative consistency. What I would look for, first of all, is character. I do not have in mind here either eccentricity or self-righteousness, but moral consistency, stability, and reliability. All of us know persons we can count on, to whom we feel free to go to for help, in whom we can confide, from whom we expect both candor or concern. Ministers of character also have what might be called personal authenticity, genuineness, or transparency, the absence of phoniness, airs, and self-importance. A person of character is, to borrow Betty Ford's apt phrase, more real than role. Unitarian Universalist ministers never did possess the authority of a priestly role in the same sense as, say, a Lutheran or an Anglican cleric. But those of us in the liberal ministry know from experience that a kind of authority accompanies the role of the minister in certain situations, such as counseling and rites of passage and preaching. In recent years, we have seen an erosion of that authority of role, so that what limited authority ministers do have must and should come from their own authenticity and reliability as men and women of character. The minister, by being a certain kind of person, should be able to speak with authority and not as the scribes, and also be in the position of being able to preach what he or she practices. No amount of professional skill or intellectual acuity can compensate for the absence or the inadequacy of character. I would, he writes, in the second place, look for a minister with a sense of calling. The minister is not apart from or superior to other careers, but as in all genuine vocations, there should be a compelling urgency to do one's best, because what one is doing is important and holy unto the aspect of eternity as well as in front of our own eyes. A sense of calling motivates us to do our work well, to be the worker. It shares with us a vision of reality and of life's possibilities that infuses us with enthusiasm. As Ralph Waldo Emerson wisely observed, nothing great is accomplished without enthusiasm. It energizes us for our work, enabling us to work hard and to work well, not in a frenzied, driven sense, but in a clearly focused, self-directed way. It humbles us, not only with an awareness of our shortcomings, but with the knowledge that we are accountable to a heritage and a reality that transcend the local congregation, personal ambition, and a particular job. In recent years, ministers have sought to professionalize our calling, a needed but perilous venture. As we have sought to be treated in a more businesslike manner regarding decent financial compensation, employment benefits, and sabbatical leaves, all in the letter of agreement, we sometimes encourage a climate where a covenant of trust is replaced by a contract of law. Similarly, some laypersons propelled prematurely to parish leadership positions and lacking experience with our congregations and movement import attitudes and practices incompatible with the called ministry. They may in fact view ministers as hirelings who are accountable to them. Both ministers and congregations need to strike a healthy balance so that the best qualities of professionalism and calling are strengthened. For example, ministers might remember that a sense of calling renders talk about 40-hour work weeks inappropriate and unprofessional. The minister who invokes the response, "Well, that's not my job," when asked by lay leaders to lend a hand with administrative or institutional tasks, may lack this sense of calling. For those of us who practice it, the profession of ministry should be something that we love, not loathe, something that enriches rather than demeans us. It should be a calling, not a chore. All of us need to remind ourselves that ministers are called however they come into your congregation, not hired. And that difference is significant. I would, in the third place, hope for a minister who is a person of culture. I don't want sermons written in textbook jargon and conversation heavy with grim, pretentious intellectualizing. But it is reasonable, I hope, to think that a minister will be cultured in the sense of being reasonably learned, informed, and interesting as a person. A minister ought to cultivate a catholicity of taste and avoid becoming either a boor or a snob. A cultured minister is acquainted with the arts and sciences, with religion, politics, sports, and television. And how else can there be contact and communication with people where they are if you are not living an authentic everyday life yourself? How else can one learn from people with varied and differing tastes? I was speaking in this vein to a group of our ministers several years ago and indicated that a cultured person would, for instance, be able to identify both Beverly Sills and John Havlicek. And one obviously cultured minister interjected, "Well, that's easy. Beverly Sills is a forward for the Boston Celtics." A fourth quality to look for in a minister is that of caring. He or she should be genuinely interested in and concerned for other persons, neither excessively self-preoccupied nor interested in others only to the extent that they meet his or her own needs. This is especially crucial in personal counseling, where there always lurks the temptation to play God, to dispense divine wisdom, or to create an unhealthy dependency. Caring is healthy and liberating when it is rooted in a vision of others as our brothers and sisters, flesh of our flesh, kin for whom we feel kindness and empathy. An extension of the caring ministry is concerned for the larger community, especially for the voiceless, the dispossessed, those who do not have or do not believe that they have any power to change their situation of suffering or of oppression. Simply put, care needs prophetic as well as pastoral expression, impelling us to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. How deeply does the minister that you have standing in front of you care about the struggle for peace and justice and bread in the world? Is there only rhetoric about caring, or is there evidence of trying to learn more about it and to do something constructive to solve the social problems that afflict our local communities, the nation, and the world? The solid minister reconciles the pastoral and the prophetic, since both spring from a spirit of caring and a resolve that what we claim for ourselves, we wish for others. A fifth quality I see in a minister, he writes, is the capacity to be creative. Most of us may not be creatively gifted, however much we harbor fantasies about writing the great novel or painting a memorable work of art or being a chef of some gourmet restaurant. We can hope, however, to cultivate a first-hand relationship to reality, to be original in the sense of listening to our own response to life and being courageous enough to share that. We can be open to new and disturbing ideas and ways of doing things, not venerating either the new or the old, but being willing to hear out the person with a new idea, or to try something to see if it works, or to deliberately shape something new with a stamp of our character upon it. A healthy capacity to innovate is every bit as important as the capacity to conserve and transmit the tried and the true. This will ensure the continuity of the human pilgrimage. And again, a minister needs to be catalytic, helping to make things happen, galvanizing people into action, sometimes providing just the impetus to bring to pass what had previously been just lying there dormant. As one who has always had an aversion to chemistry, I'm wary of pushing the metaphor of catalytic agent so far, and yet I have this conviction that the effective minister is a lever or agent, neither a do-it-all figure of paternalism nor a passive technician. The catalytic minister works to develop a ministry of the laity, the laypersons who participate in the worship and teaching and counseling and witness, and who work for the called professional leader to bring a caring and a redemptive community. A seventh quality worth seeking in ministry is a leadership style that is consultative and cooperative. It is a given in our movement that leadership be democratic and non-authoritarian. Nonetheless, democratic leadership is still leadership. It is the willingness to be out front and up front in risking initiatives and suggesting tactics and goals that not everybody will like to hear. Democratic leadership is not an abdication of either initiative or of advocacy. I don't want a minister to tell me what to do, but I do want him or her to tell me what he or she believes ought to be done. I would like to see a leadership style that is neither diffident nor arrogant, just as I would like to see congregations that are neither anti-clerical nor cleric-centric. The consultative and cooperative minister represents the middle way of Aristotle. Listens as well as speaks, learns as well as teaches, shares the challenges and burdens of leadership rather than monopolizing or relinquishing them. A ninth, and I hope it should be an assumptive, I guess, is that I would like to have a minister be professionally competent. Like other professionals, a minister ought to possess the theoretical knowledge and practical skills of the craft. Congregations have a right to expect that their minister will have mastered, for example, the art of communicating as their professional training. A minister should project, not mumble, and shape a coherent message and not ramble. He or she should have something to say and be able to say it well and with power. Teaching and counseling, witnessing, managing parish business, and empowering lay people constitute the balance of what Lyle Schaller calls the kit bag of parish skills. Competence by itself is morally neutral. It's simply the ability to do one's work well. But in combination with the other qualities of a good minister, it represents the capacity to deliver, to be the agent of our faith's heritage and vision, so that the greatest number of men and women and children know it and see it and can become empowered by it. And finally, I believe a minister should have a sense of the comic, if for no other reason than to take what I have said with a large, large grain of salt. A minister, no less than other people, and perhaps more than most, needs a healthy sense of humor and an awareness of his or her own limits. Life is rent with absurdity, incongruity, and foolishness. It is also witness to our tragic and amusing tendency to take ourselves and our work a little bit too seriously, resulting in either an unbecoming self-importance or an overdeveloped sense of responsibility. We need to be able to laugh or at least smile both at our own and others' foolishness. Humor has been divided as the absence of logic. Since we, our work, and our expectations are often illogical, we need a sense of the comic to keep things realistic and sane, especially in a calling that can too easily become solemn, utopian, and far too all-consuming. Besides, beyond that, it helps us to cheer the hearts of all whose joys in living have grown a bit jaded to have a sense of humor. My model ministry, he sums up, is a person of character and culture. He or she has a sense of calling to the ministry, seeks to be caring, creative, catalytic, consultative, collegial, competent, and to survive under the heavy weight of all these expectations, comic. How such a minister comes into being is beyond the scope of those remarks, and frankly, beyond my own understanding. Perhaps it is a gift of the grace of God, but these are what I believe to be the solid rather than the shining parts of a minister. And a ministerial search committee is given increasing priority to them rather than to a special skill, a charming manner, or an assumed ability to deliver the institutional success symbols of increased membership and budget. While we may be tempted to regard the 10 C's as perfectionistic or Pollyanna-ish, the truth is, I believe, something far different than that. A good many ministers do embody these qualities in their personal and professional lives, disproving the argument that such a model of ministry is a fantasy. What congregations and ministers need is the wisdom to give such qualities priority, and to do what can be done to encourage their development and to deepen their screening, interviewing, auditing, and deliberative procedures. With a truer, surer knowledge of potential candidates, they will be in a good position to affirm and recognize those who manifest the 10 C's of ministry. Well, I say to you today, and this is now James speaking, not David Pohl, finding such a person can only come from all of you knowing yourselves. And the next 2 years or so will be your chance to take a far greater look at who you are. Ask yourselves, who am I as a person? And how do I help to create the type of congregation I want to be a part of? What does this church mean to me? Why am I here? Why do I bring my children here? And what does it matter to my life that this church and these people who are sitting around me are now people who have become a part of me? Ministers come and go. You have seen that a lot. Ministers come and go. It is the congregation that remains. It is all of you who are this church. It is not me, it is not anybody who's come before me, nor is it anybody who comes after me. This church is you. And so I would like to end by asking you to think about what is the ground of your being. Thank you. We have 12 minutes for a polylog. Maybe 11.
I'm going to try. This mic should be working. Oh. I don't know what was wrong. The battery was fine.
My name is Kathy Gorski. I am the chair of the search task force for a new minister, and I just wanted to first thank Jane for that very helpful and heartfelt sermon, and also let people know that the task force does exist. It was built up primarily from volunteers who came to board members and asked to be on it, and then Jane and I had a discussion and filled the group out with representatives from different aspects of people in the congregation. We've met just one so far. We've spoken with via Skype with the district representative for finding new ministers. We're in the process of talking with the fellow who replaced David, whose text Jane was reading. He happens to be on vacation now, but we've been discussing with him. We're thinking that we should have listening sessions with the congregation. It's sort of tricky because if the goal of the church, of the congregation, is to go to full-time ministry down the road, we have to figure out what will we need next in the interim to get to that point. So I'll be putting a list of the members of the task force in the next newsletter and start thinking about the challenges we face and how we can find someone who meets a lot of those criteria, and the task force would really appreciate all your help and feedback. Thank you.
She was not a ringer. I didn't ask her to do that.
I am a ringer, by the way. She came. Thank you, Jane. I, for one, will miss your preaching. The 10 C's that you talked about apply to every member of this congregation, too, not just the minister. Every one of us should be thinking about all those points.
Right, yes, we do have in this congregation and in all congregations, actually, of Unitarian Universalism, sharing the ministry. It is not just the minister who ministers. It is all of us, one to each other.
I'm Jerry. And Jane, I would like to express my personal gratitude to you for like nearly 2 years that you spent with us, you, with your life and vision that you brought to us. And I really wish you well in your next life in Sweden, but we're going to miss you.
Well, thank you. I'm going to miss all of you, too. This is very emotional. I'll be very glad when this day is over, I can tell you.
My name is Kaz. When all this stuff was going on with Madison and teachers who were talking about how they're going to lose their job and they're worried, and I said to them, I said, I'm not going to worry about it. When it comes knocking at my door, then I deal with it. I am not going to waste my time. Things that doesn't happened yet, because the life has tendency to bring unexpected into your life, and that's all you can handle at that time. Well, unexpected was definitely delivered to Japanese doorstep, and he came knocking and knocked the door down. And I was talking to my sister, and she said it was just horrendous amount of change taking place because it is a roaming a blackout, and there's a trains not running. You don't know if they're going to run it or not run it, and yet they still have to get to work. People are replacing high heels. You can't hardly find high heel wearers anymore. And with the sneakers, they're carrying backpacks for them so that if they get stranded someplace, they have a survival means. People are stacking up, which is not a good thing. But also what she said was taking place was people's attitude towards life has changed. They are not seeking material things anymore, but good for the people. And this morning I just listened to a CEO of Sony was being interviewed, and what he thought of what this would do to Japan. And he said, this is the wake-up call that Japan has been waiting for, to wake the nation up, to move forward for better life. And I believe that now. I think they're going to go full force to rebuild their country, and it will become a better nation than before. So I'm going to share that with you today.
I, I don't know what I want to say except that you telling us that this is the last service is just kind of weird. And I'm assuming you're going to be around and we can, like, you know, have a moment, a Jane moment, and throw balloons and embarrass you as much as possible and stuff. Because I also really appreciated your time here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I should clarify. It's my last full sermon of me just standing up here in front of you. On April 3rd is my last service here, and it was going to be a joyous affair. I have actually no idea what it's going to be. But it's called O Brother, Where Art Thou? And it's going to be a collective endeavor, so it will not just be me. You will see me again. But I will be around, obviously, until April 19th. And April 9th, I'll be here with Mats, and we'll be dancing and helping to get people to give to this congregation. So come and see that and pay for it.
My name is Al, and I also thank you for your efforts for us, Jane. I want to speak as one who's gone through this kind of transition that many of you who are new to this congregation may be concerned about. From the very start, many of the things that Jane was talking about in terms of the congregation being the church really represent who we are. We were a lay-led congregation. We have always had member involvement from the pulpit. I would anticipate that continuing whatever transition we make with ministry. In listening to the discussion on calling a minister versus hiring a minister, it's a strange thing because it's my understanding that the congregation does vote to bring a minister on board. The congregation can vote to remove a minister. A minister is called by the group dynamics and the group agreement. However, there is also a contract, a legal contract that is signed. So, in effect, it's very gray.
It's actually very white and black. And the structure is certainly that you're called and there's a contract because you have some responsibility you're getting and you are getting paid. But it is not a hired position, and that is because it's a 24 hours a day, 7 days a week position, whether you're full-time or part-time, it doesn't make any difference, and your obligation is different than just a job. And you don't really have bosses, except 200 and some people who are your bosses. But so it's not really gray in that regard, but I think that it can be seen as gray, and that's why it's important to understand that it isn't gray.
Yep, that's the other one. It's Paul, not me.
Hi, my name's Barb. I know this is our wake-up call, but I'm reaching for the snooze button.
Jane, I'd like to thank you for the service. It was wonderful. I think it is. We have had many ministers, many part-time ministers, and I think we've learned from each of them, and hopefully they learn from us as well. And I think it will help us better choose when we are able to come to call a full-time minister to have had all of the experiences with each of our ministers, because it makes the picture clearer for us. And I think outlined in the service was a great format to go with.
Yeah. Well, a minister learns a lot. I have learned tons in this last 2 years, and I continue to learn all the time, so hope I don't ever stop, and hope I have done a little bit better each day.
My name is Esther. Jerry and I became Unitarians in, I believe it was 1975, when our youngest was then either 2 or 3 years old. I think 3 years old. And that was in Delaware. Then next, we came to Wisconsin, went to West. Then moved out of state to Colorado and didn't join any place there because we were only there 3 years. Went down to Illinois and joined the Unitarian Church in Palatine. And then came here, I believe it was in the fall of 98 is when we joined. It was only a mile and a half, or no more than a mile and a half from our house when we happened to see the sign up for a Unitarian Church in Delafield. And there have been many different kinds of Unitarians, many different kinds of ministers, I mean, many different kinds of people who have come to those churches, but I am still the same person. And, you know, I don't care if somebody else is a more Christian view than I do. We're all there for a reason. And nothing really upsets me. If they want to do a Jewish type service, that's all right. Some people come from the Jewish life. And I come from the Christian one. And, you know, when people use the Christian forms or sayings, I know what they're talking about. And, you know, it just, to me, just identifies how to describe something sometimes, like the Hail Mary pass, you know. I mean, just for example. I just play along with the whole thing, you know. I mean, I don't care. That's all I'm trying to pass on here. I'm still a Unitarian, and I don't care what all of you are. No, it's true. I don't care. It doesn't change me. I've been Unitarian. What have we been here now? I guess it's going on 36 years. And I come here because I want to listen to a minister, and I like the people, period. I guess my thing is going on here as
well. Well, Esther, did you want to say something?
Amen.
Did you want to say something, Lynn? Okay, and then that'll be the last one.
My name's Lynn. Thank you, Jane, for your years with us. We've learned a lot, I think, from each other, and it's been wonderful having you here, and we'll miss you. We have had a lot of ministers in this congregation, and I just wanted to say that I love this congregation, and we are a strong, healthy, happy congregation, and we'll get another minister, but we'll have each other, you know, and it'll be wonderful the years ahead. The board will, along with Kathy, explain, you know, what we're going to be looking forward to with the minister. There's a difference between calling a full-time minister and kind of the route we're on for the next year or two. But we'll give that explanation in writing to all of you. So thank you, and we wish you the best in Sweden.
Thank you. It's just an acorn falling on your head. Nothing to be afraid of. Okay, so we're going to sum up. A beautiful segue of the last hymn is called We Would Be One, which is actually going to be a perfect segue after what Esther said. So we would be one, no matter who we are, as we sit here together. It's number 318 in your hymnal. You may rise as you are willing and able.
Thank you.
Closing words are from T.S. Eliot. What we call a beginning is often the end. And to make an end is to make a beginning. The end is where we start from. Go in peace. Thank you.